this. Well, there's no before that, because the Big Bang also started time. So it was an event that space time came out as a result of this huge explosion of space time. So, yeah, no, I don't think... And I want to put us at our ease, we're going to solve that issue, because I think no one has quite solved the issue.
So how are you coping with life? If you don't know what time is, I mean, we're here. You arrived a little bit late, dare I say, Dara, but I'm not going to hold that against you.
But I wasn't travelling at the speed you were. So therefore, for me, my time was moving slower. We have scales of time. The most interesting... kind of way of putting it, and again, I seem to be putting the punchlines at the very start here, is that Hawking made the link in Brief History of Time, where he said that actually it goes alongside with what's called entropy, which is the disorder in the universe, basically how messier things go. Things tend to get messier. It takes energy to bring order to things.
The third law.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Thermodynamics. They all get a little bit messier. And that seems to be an arrow for time. So basically, time is the way the universe gets messier.
Well, all you've done there is actually take me back to story, because people say, what is story? And the basic element of story is and then, and then, and then. You should know, you're a fantastic storyteller. Basically, you say and then, and then, and then, and people laugh. But you've actually said that all that we know about time is and then, and then, and then. Have I got that right?
Essentially, yes. Yeah. It progresses. It just goes, the and thens come faster for different people, depending on the circumstances they're in.
Right.
I mean, if you had a twin and you sent him off on a rocket for a year and brought him back, that twin will be a slightly different age to you. They've been going at some velocity.
I think I just about understand that. Is that Einstein, is it?
That was Einstein. That was all... Look, ultimately, it all comes out to Einstein. But in the midst of this, whatever this is, whatever this kind of procession of entropy, of whatever this disorder happening, we live it as a very objective truth in our lives. And in its subjectivity as well. So, yes, all the phrases you talk about, and our own relativity of time, our own sense of, you know, the last 5 minutes of a football match when you're winning pass very differently to the last 5 minutes of a football match when you're losing.
Oh, it's drawing and you're desperate to score. And I know we're speaking as confederates of a certain club in North London that we won't mention.
We've suffered in the same church. but it is our perception of time is probably then what shapes our language about it, and it shapes our sense of it. And that is an enormously subjective thing that we place onto things.
Yeah. So language is intertwined with all this stuff. And through language, we can find that actually we hold two quite different concepts in our heads with the word. I'm going to just try you on this. I'm sure you know it. But we use the one word in English, time, to mean actually very different things. So if I say to you, Dara, what time's your meeting? And you say to me, 2 p.m., and then I might say, Dara, how long's it going on for? And then you might say, well, a couple of hours. And then I say, that's a long time. I've used the same word, but one's an event and the other's a duration, isn't it? But we've got the same word.
Yes, you're right. One occurs at a point, at an objective point, but the and then the other is, yeah, you're absolutely right, is the time along some scale that keeps moving.
Well, I'm aware of it, because I can speak French, and in French you say foi. Fois, you say, il y avait une fois, there once upon a time, meaning a moment. Fois, and then French other word is temps, T-E-M-P-S, and that's this duration bit, the time. Now, you speak other languages.
In Spanish, for example, it would be horas, would be time, as in que hora es.
Which is interesting there, because you say what hour it is.
Yes, it is.
So you're bound to the chronometer almost.
Yes, you are, very much. And actually, you even say, something will happen a las seis, at the six, at six, because they've dropped the hours. They drop the end of it off. So yes, it is very much bound to there being some large bell ringing somewhere in the middle of the village that they basically indicated.
There's the old watchman there clanging away.
Yes. And I remember once, years ago, being in a Spanish village, and and every 15 minutes that bloody bell went off. A little dong once every 15 minutes, and then a bigger dong in the hour. And I thought, no one needs this. No one needs this at 1 o'clock in the morning, lads. There's no need for this.
Yes, I think French villages have taken it down to the half hour.
But again, whereas time is tempo, whatever, which is also weather, as in, like, you don't
get. Yes, that's
and
right.
In Irish, we have that as well. In Irish, we say "am" for time, and we also say "I'm sure" for a period of time, but we also say "I'm sure" for weather. And so the very famous phrase in Ireland about time is "Isman Scaly and Thamshire," which means the time is a good storyteller. Which is one of those phrases, I'm sure you know, but there were, in which basically, you know, the way with language is written, not in the court, but knowing the people, or written in the idioms of the people, like whatever, whose lives are difficult in their lives. And so there's a lot of phrases that basically are about, you know, don't we, time will pass, this too shall pass, that you know, the suffering you're having at the moment, you know, that will go because time keeps moving, and then and this can't last forever. So as Mahanshkalian time she means, time will write the story. We'll write the great story. In Spanish, there's a phrase which is, no hay mal que endure 100 años. Nothing bad lasts 100 years. Which is basically to go, you know, look, this can't go on forever.
But the future for me is a blank exercise book. You remember when you got an exercise book in school? I remember it very well, and you used to smell it, and then kids would chew up the corner of it and flick it at the teacher. Well, goodness me, I'm back in the past. Anyway, there you go. So you had the exercise book, and it was blank. And I used to look at it and think, I wonder what's going to go into this blank exercise book. And I used to really wonder about it as to what would be it, because at the end of the year, it would be full.
Yes.
And that seemed quite extraordinary. I don't know.
Okay, can I ask? Sorry, and we may drift off and then drift back.
No, drifting is good.
So a blank page, would you regard, and have you always regarded the blank page as a potential rather than an oppressive thing? As a writer, have you already gone?
I've written a poem about it. I call it a friend. It is the friend. You can say anything to a blank piece of paper or a blank screen, and it won't answer back. It won't tell you that you're naff. It won't tell you that you're wonderful. You can do whatever you want, and it can be just between you and that. And I have a sense of unfolding time as I write onto it. In fact, that's what I call it, unfolding. And that if I write, I'm with Dara, so let's say I'm going to create a present, even though it's in the past. Yep. I'm with Dara in the studio, and that's a line there, and then I do another line, and I unfold it like that, and I just think, yes. Do you find the blank page a bit frightening?
I find my initial thoughts that I put onto a blank page are not worthy of the blank page, and I have that. Do you know that sense for you? It's why I always buy cheap pads. The ones you go into is just any box on a stationery store. Not the leather-bound books. The notion of opening this, every word should be perfectly poised to be onto these books, because you feel this is the draft of history that I'm going to leave behind. Mm. Whereas the notepads...
Dara's Magna Carta.
Yeah, exactly. That's the whole thing there. So I quite like it. I like scribbling, and I like putting things down and half-formed ideas. But I think the pages for that.
Yes.
The pages for half-formed ideas.
And just looking at your lovely scribbles there, and I love scribbles on pages. Of course, you talk about the time-space continuum. If a page, going down the page, that is space, it's taking up space, but it also... Have I got this right?
Yes.
It represents time, doesn't it?
It does, of course, because you go along that page.
Yes.
Yes, you do. And you go along the page, and then each mark is you further in time.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. And each turn of a page of a book is you proceeding further in time.
That's my exercise book, you see. I even had a sense as a 13, 14, 15-year-old that time would pass by the end of the year through my terms at school, and that would then fill. So there was... That was the space. It was the time-space continuum, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, I tell you what. Let's talk about our lives, me and you.
Right.
And how we think about... Now, I'll talk about me for a bit here, about periods in our lives. And I wonder whether we see this in similar ways. Now, for me, there's a period in my life, and this is between... I can pretty well date it between the age of 5 and about 13. And there's so much of it and so many details of it. I can even see shoes that people are wearing. I can see my friend James Gray's jacket. And I can remember his laugh. He had a little laugh that was sort of self-deprecating. He'd go, and sort of little thing. And I can see Max Wheeler, I can see his shoes. These are people I meet, so, you know, if you're listening, Max and James. But I can see them from this period, and I can see my brother, and I can see the frosted thing on the window, and the fact that it had little flowers in it and all this. And I can feel it with my fingers now. I'm putting my fingers up to it. And it's really intense. And then I go to, and I'll pick another era in my life, 23 to 30, and there's none of the intensity, none of the detail. So I've got a sense that those are two different kinds of time, because one, because of the detail, is very long. If you sat me down in a room, this is a nightmare for my wife. Don't ask him about what it was like when he was 7. Anyway, and here I am. But anyway, so between 5 and 13, I could sit here for probably 3 weeks talking about it. If you said, now let's jump to 23 and 30, and I'd probably be through by now. So I just wonder, is there anything like you, or am I a bit of a freak?
But it's opposite. And so yes, there is exactly the same thing, except that for me, the vividness starts at 16. And while I'm aware I had a childhood, and there are photographs of me having a childhood, honestly, I felt like my life began when I was able to start making decisions, of specifically choosing subjects for the equivalent of the Irish A-level, I think, called the Leaving Cert, choosing subjects with a view to studying things I wanted to study and making those decisions for myself.
Really?
And then going into university, and then the years immediately afterwards, you know, first girlfriends, up until about 28, or the there's a whole period there of living, first gigs, first experiences in the working world.
Yes.
Those are incredibly vivid for me. Those are my nostalgia things, that I would go back if I'm in a city that I was in my 20s. I would go, oh, I must go and visit that place. I was in Paris about a week ago doing a gig.
Yes.
And I went to the hostel I stayed in 1989.
Is it still there?
Oh, still there.
Now, what did that do for you? Now, you see, I do this. I do a bit of that. I just sort of creep around. But of course, I go to the place where I was, guess what?
Yeah.
Between the ages of 5 and 13.
Yeah.
That's right. So I go there and I kind of ripple. I have a sense that I'm there, but I know I'm there as I was, but that's not possible. Look at me. This is 75 years later. This is just absurd. You know, I stood outside the flat that we lived in, and I went round the back, and I picked up a pebble that I must have trodden on because it was outside our backyard, and I've got it. It's in my actually empty harmonica box, but never mind that. And I look at it, and it transports me. I have a real sense of that. So when you I'm jumping in there, when you went to Paris and you stood outside this hostel, were you there in these two senses?
Yes, I could remember the window that we watched from myself and a couple of friends who were taking this trip at 17.
Yes.
I can remember the feeling of everything being new.